Support for this public radio podcast comes from Bose, offering Bose in-ear headphones designed for comfort and quality sound and featuring soft silicone tips in three sizes at bose.com/radio.
As a kid, I got pushed around some, verbally for the most part. The low point was running out to a kickball game and being told that while I wouldn't be allowed to play, they were considering using my head as home base. I cried my way straight to the guidance counselor's office, an appointment I had actually forgotten about until that very moment. I told him how the other kids were taunting me, and he said something like, "Well, that's what you get for being late for your appointment." This is In the Loop. I'm Jeff Horwich. We think of bullying as a childhood thing. Every year, news magazines court parental readers with their cover stories on how to protect your kids. Schools put out zero-tolerance policies and the occasional cringe-worthy music video with a rapping principal.
I'm DRC and I'm no fool. This is your town, but this is my school. I'm up here rapping with a great MC. If a bully gives you trouble, they'll get trouble from me. They'll be running like cramps from a sinking ship. Just stay out of trouble, and that's my tip. I'm DRC, and I'm here to say all the bully behavior should go away.
That's nice. Making bullying behavior go away is complicated. But the message is simple. Bullying has no place in anyone's healthy childhood. Stomp it out. There are lots of well-meaning people rapping terribly, but nonetheless trying to make this happen. Fast forward a couple of decades, when we're all supposed to act more adult. The safety net is gone, but the bullies are still here.
I actually work with my aunt, and it comes down to this gesture that she makes. She looks at me straight in the eye, and she laughs. And it's that type of sense where I all of a sudden just feel a little smaller than I actually am, and it feels hurtful.
About the only place adult bullying has really been studied is the office, probably because it affects bottom-line stuff like work or productivity. More than a third of Americans say they have been bullied at work. But it's not just a work thing. Family, neighbors, politics, international affairs. Anywhere we adults have to relate to each other, we can bully each other.
My brother-in-law here pushes me around a lot. And now that we're not in a setting where there's people looking over us all the time, teachers, faculty members, or even a lot of peers, he gets away with a lot more.
Oh, I think it's completely true. I can push him down whenever I want. No one's going to stop me.
He makes fun of me a lot, too.
What makes adult bullying so pernicious is not just that the teachers don't have our backs anymore. Unlike school, the adult world specifically creates all these formal roles and power relationships we have to deal with. Bosses, spouses, customer, and clerk. We're in and out of these situations every single day where we have to negotiate our way towards some goal.
We're raised from when we're little kids to say you can grow up and get whatever you want. And for a lot of people, it doesn't matter what it takes to get that.
What's the difference between being assertive, confident, straightforward, all things we value, and being a bully?
How do you behave with some of those kinds of qualities you were describing and still do it in a way that's, you know, constructive or ethical?
That's a great question to keep in mind as we move into tonight's show. There's sometimes a thin line between bullying and the qualities we associate with success. From the office to the military, to the gym, to the halls of international power, it's an episode we're calling Bullying for Grown-Ups. Our house band, The Smarts, and our audience here at Minnesota Public Radio are ready to weigh in. Whether you're with us by radio, podcast, or here in person, thanks for getting shoved into another episode of In the Loop. So we wanted experiences with bullying, and we did what we do here. We went to our listeners.
I am a lawyer, but please don't hold that against me. I think most people assume that most lawyers are bullies, and sometimes they're right.
I do software support for a large company. After 2 years in my position, my boss hired someone new to help me. Instead, that person became my bully.
I used to work as a copy consultant at Kinko's. Right after I started, the company unveiled the new uniform, big blue aprons emblazoned with the marketing slogan, "Express Yourself." Yep, Thousands of underpaid human beings across the world were bullied into wearing identical blue aprons.
Most lawyers who bully think they're doing their client a favor. But there's a fine line between being an advocate for your client and being a bully.
The customers at Kinko's, who were, of course, always right, bullied me constantly.
Over the years, I've been bullied by a bunch of attorneys.
My bully wanted to be the star of the office. He'd contradict me at every opportunity and always during meetings.
Before depositions, some lawyers will go into the conference room and raise their chairs as high as they will go, and then my client's chair as low as it will go.
One customer argued with me about whether or not Kinko's sold gas.
He would take all the glory jobs, all the fun tasks.
Kinko's doesn't sell gas.
Then he'd make me do all the mundane tasks. He said that was all I was capable of doing. Pretty soon, I started to believe him.
One night, a crazed MnDOT employee rushed in with the final proposal for the Hiawatha light rail system. He told me that if I couldn't make 15 copies of it in 5 minutes, there would be no light rail in the Twin Cities, and I would be personally responsible. Clearly, I succeeded.
I don't think I've ever been a bully.
Here's the real sad truth of my story. Nobody cared.
Okay, so there was this one time I sort of bullied somebody. I was dealing with this really difficult client, and I had to get tough. It was right before I was giving my closing argument, and the jury was about to come back in, and my client started acting up.
After 3.5 years of being bullied at Kinko's, something inside me finally snapped.
So I told him, "Shut your pie hole."
Suddenly, I had an overwhelming desire to express myself.
Shut your pie hole. I'm not proud of it, but it did get him to simmer down.
So I quit Kinko's and swore I would never wear a big blue apron again.
The attorneys that I respect the most, they always act above board, and they don't belittle people to help their clients. I aspire to do the same.
By complete happenstance, I was offered a job in another part of the company. Now I get to work from home. The only bully in my house is my dog, Bandit, demanding that I let him outside.
That's Angie, Jennifer, and Joseph. Round of applause for them, if you would. Angie Williams is a software business analyst. Jennifer Ampulski is a partner at the law firm of Mayer & Gear. Joseph Scrimshaw is a playwright and performer based here in the Twin Cities. More about him at josephscrimshaw.com. You're listening to Minnesota Public Radio and In the Loop. I'm Jeff Horwich. We're online at minnesotapublicradio.org/in the loop. Now, all those folks you just heard, they're members of what we call our Public Insight Network. It's this group of people that we can go to, and it turns up wonderful stories like that. So we've got some experiences under our belts now. Let's delve a little deeper into our exploration of the adult bully.
I often say that bullies have too much of a good thing.
That's Fran Sepler. Fran, actually, is another member of our network. Companies hire Fran to come in, sit down with their bullies one-on-one, and do everything she can to unbullify them. Fran knows bullies, so we asked her to stop by and help us with a definition.
I often say that bullies have too much of a good thing. You tend to have people who are very forceful, people who are very decisive, people who have strong opinions, but bullies go over the top, and they use things like degradation, intimidation, threats, tearing other people down, sometimes even using a large physical presence to create a sense of fear in people. And the real symptom that you're working with or for a bully is that each day you have an increasing sense of dread of having to deal with them. You begin to get fearful or anxious even before they walk into a room because you know that ultimately they're going to get what they want from you by making you afraid or making you hurt or making you feel less than you are.
Give me some examples of bullies that you have dealt with.
I tend to deal with bullies in the professions, which means medicine, law, sales, people who are considered to be very high-performing individuals. Some of the examples of behaviors that I've had to deal with is a surgeon who became angry with a scrub nurse, took a scalpel, threw it, and actually got a slice cut out of her forehead. It's not always that dramatic. I had an attorney who got very angry in a meeting, stood up, banged the table to the extent that two water glasses fell off the table. And then I've also dealt with bullies who weren't loud, but they were just cruel. An individual who leaned into his secretary, this was a physician, and said to her, "How does it feel every morning to wake up knowing you're the stupidest human being on the planet?" Bullies can also be very strategic, and they can threaten political or social consequences to people. I know you wouldn't want your life to be miserable around here, so I know that you're going to agree to go along with whatever my plan is or my strategy is. So there is clearly a scale from the very strategic, manipulative bully all the way up through the really physical, intimidating bully.
So a company, let's say, asks you to come in. They say, "We've got somebody we think is a bully. They're a problem. They're not motivating people in the right way." What's the first thing that you'll say to somebody when you enter the room?
I'll ask them to tell me what they feel are their strengths. I'll ask them to tell me what they're good at. I get people telling me what brilliant surgeons they are or what their fabulous sales record has been. And very quickly, I can feed back to them, "So you really don't see your strength as working with people, do you?" And it's a great opener to begin to realize that you can be a brilliant technician, you can be a brilliant attorney, you can win cases based on your fine analysis of the facts. But ultimately, if you can't get people to come with you, you're out there all alone.
That's Fran Sepler, HR consultant and bully fixer. We're going to check in with Fran a few times during the show, bring her professional experience to bear on this question of how we deal with bullies now that we're all grown up. When we're kids, schools have zero tolerance for anything that smacks of bullying. In the adult world, the message we get, well, it's a little bit more complicated. We'd all like to think bullies don't succeed or they won't get away with it. But this is the real world. In many ways, there's kind of a bully culture in this country, especially in the realms of business and entertainment. I figure the least we can do is write some songs about it. Here we go. Bob Nardelli was the king of the hilly and the big Home Depot boss. His boss routine was like a mix between Mussolini and Diana Ross. Top down management, arrogant, confident, temper on the edge of a knife. Learned at GE, the boss factory, where they bring good things to life. Well, then he took a beating at the shareholder meeting and the questions got a little tough. Threw his weight around, staring people down, cutting everybody off. Well, Bob made a killing, $210 million, when the board said they wanted him gone. Chrysler said, "Ooh, we need a guy like you," and so the bully boss goes on. Well, I will push you around, and I'll get paid to do it. I'm at the top of my game, and let's face it, you blew it. I'm in charge for a reason, and it's time that you knew it. I'll push you around, and I'll get paid to do it. Oh. Management style has its very own aisle at the local bookstore now. Take charge of your world, you're no one's little girl, and these books will show you how. Code word of leadership, cultivate a readership of people trying to get to the top. Take what you need, it's your right to succeed. Every season there's another crop. Yeah, CEOs will tell you how to beat the other fella and advance yourself at work. Well, Redstone, Eisner, Jack Welch inspire you to be a better jerk. Conferences, seminars, listen to it in your car, you can start to make the switch. Live self-help just to search yourself, and you can make the world your slave. Well, I will push you around, and I'll get paid to do it. I have been reading
some books, you know there ain't nothing to it. And though I'm sure it's not fun, that you have got to go through it. I'll push you around and I will get paid to do it. Turn on the TV, Bill O'Reilly is telling guests to shut their face. The world would be so flat without bullies like that who can put us in our place. People love Dr. Laura as a woman with the aura of a bully who won't take no guff. We let Martha go even though we know she could bite our head right off. Well, Russell Crowe gets by even though he's a guy who tried to knock your face right in. We love to see Kanye try to bully his way to some award he didn't win. If you're gonna be one to really get things done, don't be afraid to bare your teeth. Just take Dick Cheney, certified meanie and America's bully in chief. You know I'll push you around and I'll get paid to do it. I'm at the top of my game and let's face it, you blew it. I'm in charge for a reason and it's time that you knew it. I'll push you around and I will get paid to do it.
Thank you, everybody. The smarts, as always, backing me up. You're listening to In the Loop, and I'm Jeff Horwich. Our bullying culture extends beyond business and entertainment. You never know when you're going to run into a bully. In everyday encounters, it can just appear, people's dark impulses lashing out. Our friend Amy Salloway is a writer and performer who's been thinking about this. Amy, thanks for coming here to In the Loop.
Thanks for having me.
So, what's an example of what you run into?
At least once a week, I get mooed at.
Moo!
I jerk up from the magazine I've perched on my elliptical at the gym in time to see two beefy young men turning from me towards the free weights and snickering with laughter. I tell myself not to get angry. I tell myself to use the anger. I pretend that the elliptical pedals are the faces of the beefy young men.
Moo!
It doesn't just happen at the gym. It happens when I'm walking down Hennepin. Then it's guys leaning out their car windows, their moos changing key in that satisfying Doppler way as they drive by.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's not moos, but shouts of, "Hey, ugly," or "Hoo, you fat," or "Why don't you go on a diet, pig," as I buy coffee or ride the bus or wait at the bus stop. All of these are prime places for bullying. Most of us think of bullying as one person intimidating another, but I'd call what these guys are engaging in societally condoned bullying, meaning that instead of an individual targeting an individual, a group targets a group. In this case, an anonymous selection of males gets blanket permission to victimize the obese. The fact that I can identify this discrimination, though, doesn't mean I understand why, after 30-some-odd years, it's still happening to me. I don't. When I was a kid and I'd come home crying after my art projects were flushed down the toilet or my stomach was harpooned with number 2 pencils or my gym class had organized their name calling into 4-part harmony, my mother would kvetch, "Amy, what are you doing to provoke this behavior? You must be doing something to make kids antagonize you like this." I knew I was chubby, brainy, oversensitive, and irregular. These were my trademarks. I wasn't proud. But I couldn't figure out how I was antagonizing anyone. I thought I was just doing what Mr. Rogers told me to do, being the only one like me. There were parent-teacher conferences. There was therapy. Strategies were implemented. Ignore them. Apologize to them. Laugh with them. Face of stone, Amy. Face of stone. They want a reaction. It didn't work. I was victimized no matter what. And at those rare times when I felt a spark of self-preservation, I fumed, "It can't go on forever. This will end when I'm a grown-up. Grown-ups don't bully.
Moo!
The sound breaks my daydreaming, and I snap up from the elliptical to see who at the gym is smirking at me now. But this time, the moo isn't pointed at me. It's aimed at a woman on the treadmill to my right, larger and lumpier than I. I see her face crumble and her shoulders tense and recognize the reactions in my own body. I think of what I could tell her, what advice I would give. I peddle each phrase, ignore them, apologize to them, moo with them. Talking to her might help her, might be that one small but significant action that makes a difference. And as much as I want to do it, I'm silent. I step and breathe and don't say a word. Because for this rare and beautiful moment, I'm not the one being bullied, and it feels really good.
That's Amy Salloway. Amy's one-woman show called Circumference gets way into this issue of grown-up bullying. You can see where she's performing by visiting Amy Salloway, with two L's, amysalloway.com. And you can hear more of Amy, if you want to, on our recent Story Slam. Let's bring the lights up here a little bit and kick it out to our audience, the UBS Forum here at Minnesota Public Radio. And let's just start with the broadest question of all. Where do you experience bullying?
Hi, I'm Mary from Minneapolis. This summer I was working in a show, and I was learning another woman's part, and I was going to play it occasionally. And we were out socializing outside of doing the show, and as I was telling her a story, she flat out looked at me and said, "You remind me of a fat version of one of my friends."
Ouch.
Yeah. But clearly, I think she was just like trying to intimidate me and cut me down, whatever. So I just kept going on with my story.
You're both grown-ups, right?
Yeah.
What goes through your...
arguably.
Well, right. I mean, clearly that's not appropriate, but does it surprise you, or is that just humanity?
I guess it's humanity, because here it is happening to people all the time.
Thanks for your story. Mm-hmm. All right, who else? We only want your first name. Yes, right there.
John Paul in Woodbury, and I had a job once where the boss wanted me to bully somebody, get more performance out of this person, tell them that they're not doing their job well enough. I had no idea if they're doing their job well enough. They're on the other side of the country. I'm not doing their job. The solution I came up with was sort of to commiserate with the other person, say, "I have this boss who wants me to bully you, and he's going to bully me until we get this done, so can we work together to get this done?"
Oh, very creative. You think it just wasn't in your nature to do that?
I mean, I can get angry, and I could be aggressive if I really felt justified. It seems appropriate to me to bully a bully. If you see somebody bullying someone else, then, yeah, step up and say, "Hey, that's not appropriate."
Thank you. Well, Amy mentioned at the end of her story about seeing somebody else bullied and not reacting. Anybody ever been there? Yes, right here.
Jill St. Paul. I was bullied in a meeting once, and only one person out of eight actually said anything. And I was sobbing at the time. So I think people are really intimidated by it, and it makes you shut up.
Thank you. What's different? Oh, yeah, let's go over here.
Hi, I'm Steve from Minneapolis. I have an experience from the flip side of this. I've been accused on many occasions of being too aggressive in making my point of view known. This comes from, you know, parents being really encouraging when you're growing up, and combined with just a love of arguing. So, I've had to learn how to express strong opinions without communicating them in a personal way.
Can you give me an example, Steve? When have you known that you crossed that line or were right up to that line?
In college, I was in a seminar class, and I was really excited about it. And I loved having conversations about it. That is to say, conversations between me and the professor and 10 silent people for an hour. And
you feel like you bullied the whole rest of the class.
I don't feel like I bullied
silence.
Anybody, but okay. 10 people, you know, and then I find out a semester later, secondhand, like, "Oh, there's this real jerk in this class, and all he did was, you know, overshadow everybody." So that was sort of a wake-up call.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Sure, right here.
Just give me your name and where you're
I'm
from.
I'm Mary Claire, and I'm from Bayport. People who are on the autism spectrum, people with Asperger's, have a lifetime of low-level bullying. I have Asperger's. I didn't know I had Asperger's. I spent so much of my life looking at self-help books, getting therapy, trying to find out how to improve myself. It wasn't me that needed improving. And I think that society needs to consider that there are people with PhDs who are computer geeks, who have engineering degrees. They look normal. They don't look as if they have a disability, but we do.
Let me just jump in here. And you said this is a lifetime experience. Kids, you would think, sure, teasing happens, right? But why don't some people grow out of it?
Well, the problem is that people with Asperger's elicit predatory or bullying type behavior. I can't tell you exactly what it is about me that does that, but I know for sure that I do it. We have a communication problem. We don't talk like other people. We don't understand your communications. We miss when you're joking and when you're serious. When I worked as a scientist, somebody said that I caused their nervous breakdown. I eventually left that lab. I had nothing to do with that guy's nervous breakdown. He admitted that some years later.
It sounds like you're talking about signals. There are signals that bullies, you know, pick up on, whether it's something like Asperger's or just sort of weakness in general. Very interesting. Let's talk about the family realm, personal relationships. You know, sometimes the bullies that we deal with are so close, and we don't even recognize them for exactly what they are. Here's a quick story from Sandy. Sandy's a listener who also happens to work as a professional mediator. So you'd think she'd be able to spot a bully a mile away.
My name is Sandy. My story has to do with coming back into the dating scene after being away from it for many, many, many years. And I was quickly attracted to someone who was fun and was chivalrous, and he wooed me, and it felt good. It was subtle at first. But when I started to see it come out, I thought, how in the world didn't I see this? One day, I actually was out to dinner with him, and he ordered for me. Didn't even want to let me look at the menu. It was, this is what you have to have. I'm ordering that for you. This is the drink you ought to have. I'm ordering that to you. I don't want that drink. No, you have to have it. At the point where, in our relationship, he was looking deeper into more of a commitment, and I felt that it was not something that had come to that level for me, then he said, well, it is at that level, and this is what we should do. And I realized, oh my gosh, I need to be out of this relationship. I work in a field that is involved with anti-bullying campaigns, and all the signs, the classic signs of bullying, were there for me to see, and I missed them.
Sandy's in our audience tonight, and I just want to ask you quickly, Sandy, why did you miss him? Why didn't you see it?
I didn't want to see it, I think. You know, somebody that's independent and somebody that's confident is attractive. When you're maybe a little bit more vulnerable, where I happened to be in a little weaker condition at the time, and I realized that it was subtle, but it was there, and I should have noticed it.
You got out and moved on, I hope?
Yeah. Yes, I did.
Thank you, Sandy.
You're welcome.
Now, none of us wants to be a pushover. We all want to be successful. Some people want to be leaders, and the world needs leaders. Good leaders, like Sandy was just saying, are usually assertive, confident, forthright. We like people like that. When does all of that give way to being a bully? To think about that, let's go back to our bully expert, human resource consultant Fran Sepler.
Bullies are made, they're not born.
Fran, as you might recall, is hired by companies to come in and deal with the bullies in their ranks.
In general, bullies have themselves been bullied by someone, so they've had the behavior modeled. And if you're bullied as a child, and if you're hurt very often by a parent or a sibling, by observing the bullying behavior itself, you become convinced that that's the only way to not be hurt is to hurt others. And so you begin to find that the self-esteem, the feelings of fear and anxiety that were incurred on you can be reversed by you taking control of all of your relationships and not letting anybody ever do that to you again. And many of the bullies that I deal with in the corporate world have not really socialized with people in their lives. They were in the laboratory or the library while everybody else was hanging out and developing relationships. They were getting ready to be the top of their class and win at everything and win at all costs. And many of them are involved in sports where they had very strong reinforcement to be extremely aggressive, extremely competitive.
Which suggests that bullies do succeed, right? Being a bully doesn't mean you can't succeed in business. You can't succeed at your profession. Sometimes they do very well.
That's kind of a chicken and egg question, because if you weren't so good at what you did, I don't think you would be allowed to bully. So you are successful in spite of the bullying rather than because of it. In other words, we tend to find people who are technically brilliant, who are very good at their profession, and are tolerated because of that.
So how do you draw the line between what's just being assertive, being a leader, you know, somebody who takes command of a situation, all these things that are encouraged in business or in the professions particularly, and somebody who's a bully? It's a very thin line, I would think, when you cross over.
Well, it is. And particularly since the very same behavior that can be inspirational when it has some emotional intelligence and empathy behind it can be bullying when it doesn't. And so the real difference is whether the individual who's being decisive and assertive and maybe even loud is doing it with some degree of awareness of the effect that the behavior is having on the people around them. And because they want to be effective, because they want a good result, they know when to stop it. They know when to pull back because they're no longer motivating or exciting or energizing people, but instead are having precisely the opposite effect. And that, to me, is the difference between an assertive, forceful leader and someone who's a bully.
That's Fran Sepler. We'll have more of my conversation with her a little later in the show. You're listening to In the Loop. I'm Jeff Horwich. If you think about places where bullying, or at least, let's say, you know, harsh treatment of another human being, is put to actual practical use in our society, the military comes to mind, right? Boot camp, push-ups in the mud, drill sergeants, you know, yelling right in your face for something that, to an outsider, looks like a tiny infraction. Now, more than any other service, the Army has struggled in recent years to meet its recruitment goals. They're doing better now. But some soldiers say basic training ain't quite what it used to be.
Picture in your mind a person who at the time seems larger than life gets in your face to the point where they may as well be inside of your face and is screaming at you at the top of their lungs is really what it is. My name is Andy Davis. I'm 26 years old. I'm from St. Peter, Minnesota. I served 6 years to include 2 tours in Afghanistan and 1 in Iraq. Well, I left for Army basic training in 1999 and was met with what many people call a shark attack, which is several drill sergeants and folks who are in charge of basic training running out to your bus or transportation, yelling at you, making you do push-ups, hurry up and run with your gear. The enemy that you might face someday is not going to be nice to you. I went through all of that training, all of that degradation, and then I started bringing soldiers through. Privates or people graduating basic training started to come under my leadership or under my wings to develop into squad members and team members. And the first few waves seemed to have the same training as I did. But as time went on, and I don't know if it was moving soldiers through faster or if it was the quote-unquote kindler, gentler army, I don't know how much of an accurate term that is, but some people would say that's what it was. I had people who came with not as much hustle, maybe not moving quite as quickly to get to formation. Person shows up late, ask him why. And I think the core difference between my time coming late would have been, you know, no excuse, sergeant, and a soldier coming in and actually having one. You know, there really isn't an excuse, but a person making that up. And what I saw was starting to question and doubting my corrective action. As a civilian, someone getting in my face about something very simple that I screwed up seems out of character. Why would somebody do this? But as a person who's been to combat now, I see it as this is why somebody yelled at me about being late. This is why somebody yelled at me about falling out of a run. This is why somebody yelled at me when my weapon jammed and I panicked. You know, it looks like bullying if I'm coming out of high school in Minnesota. But as a person who lived both sides of it, I see the importance of it.
That's Staff Sergeant Andy Davis. He's retired now from the military, but still working as a contractor for the Army. He was going to be here tonight, as a matter of fact, but was very suddenly called off to D.C. Fortunately, we were able to catch him before he left. Andy told us when he would yell at new soldiers in his unit, treat them like he was treated, they'd look at him like he was a jerk, like they'd never been talked to that way. Now, we're going to hear from the Army in just a minute, but first I want to go to David Van Cort, who's in our audience here. Where is David? There he is. Hey, David. How you doing?
Hey, Jeff.
Now, you went through basic about a year ago, right?
Yep.
And right now you're serving in the National Guard. You come from an Army family, pretty strong Army culture in your family.
Very strong.
So what were you expecting when you went off to boot camp?
When I went to get off the bus, I was expecting the shark attack. And all of a sudden, I see these drill sergeants coming, and they say, get off the bus, let's walk to the barracks and put our stuff down.
A little more laid back than
laid back, way laid back. And I didn't even do push-ups until 4 hours after I got off the bus.
So was it just day one, or did your whole experience in boot camp play out that way?
The whole experience, 4 months, was nice and relaxed, like a summer camp, actually. Basically, wow. Having fun with your buddies and just doing what you're supposed to be doing.
Were you disappointed?
Way disappointed. I was expecting basically to gain a couple pounds of muscle by doing a lot of push-ups, sit-ups, and didn't gain anything, actually.
You're expecting to be bullied a little bit?
I expected to be way bullied, and all of a sudden I didn't get it at all.
David Van Cort, thanks for coming and joining us in our audience tonight. Okay, so here's the general situation. You know, the Army has been struggling, fair to say, with recruitment. Their recruitment has been quite a bit better in recent years, as well as their retention. And there is this idea out there that we can chalk this up to boot camp being, I don't know, a little gentler, a little softer. We've got Sergeant Major Brian Carlson on the phone with us from Fort Jackson, South Carolina. Are you there?
Yes, I am. How you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing well. Thanks very much for being a part of the show tonight. You oversee the drill instructor training school there.
Yes, I do.
Okay, so this scenario we're talking about, is basic training getting softer somehow?
No, as a matter of fact, I would say that basic training now is getting much more difficult. We focus more on placing the stress at the level of the task for the individual soldier. It's unfair to assume that screaming and hollering will produce the results that many folks are looking for.
Now, the wording that I've heard, I think it was a press conference a couple of weeks ago where an undersecretary of defense talked about this, that the new approach is kind of coaching related as opposed to intimidation. What does coaching mean?
Coaching is where a leader assists leading the soldier through the accomplishment of the task. First, you will direct the task. You will train the soldier to a level where they should be able to accomplish the task. When the soldier can no longer accomplish the task, then you will start to assist. What's most important is the soldier learns how to execute the task to the standard that's going to keep them or their buddies on their left and right safe in a combat scenario.
So you're saying that this idea that fear is a great motivator, maybe that was never very accurate?
Yeah, I would argue that it's actually really a poor example of leadership. Fear works really great when the leader is present to execute whatever activities is instituting fear. The problem is what happens when the leader is removed and the soldier is now expected to execute something on their own. And that fear, or the presence of fear, has been completely removed. We would rather soldiers execute based on their own initiative, their own sense of duty. And there you'll get the results you're looking for.
One last question for you before we let you go. You know, we civilians look at this boot camp experience, which, you know, even if it is changing over the years, it's still a rough time, fair to say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we call this bullying, or it looks like bullying to us. Is there bullying that goes on in boot camp? Is that still an aspect of it?
Well, I think it depends on who's viewing it and their perception of bullying. Do drill sergeants still get loud or yell while they're trying to accomplish tasks? Yes, that does happen. Is it in your face, as one of the listeners cited? There's less of that happening because now there's more leading. We still expect soldiers to accomplish a high level of fitness. So in some cases, that is going to be a firm environment. But I would not say that you could classify it as bullying. Leadership in this type of environment has nothing to do with personal feelings. This is about task accomplishment and learning a job to a point where others can count on that individual.
That's Sergeant Major Brian Carlson joining us all the way from Fort Jackson, South Carolina. Thank you very much for making some time for us tonight.
Thank you, Jeff. And if I could, I'd just like to thank the two listeners for their service as well.
Of course.
Thank you.
Too small, you're in the way. Big men say you're much too near, you're just a child, get out of here. Now they'll pick on you for something to do, don't argue or they'll throw you. Put you down. A big man say you're just a jerk. Don't like your clothes, don't like your work. They misconstrue your point of view, and when they're through, they'll put you.
That's the Smarts. Joe Weissman on bass, Morris Engel on drums, Jimmy Kennedy on guitar and vocals. You're listening to In the Loop. I'm Jeff Horwich. From that conversation about the military, let's step into an even bigger realm of bullying, if we can call it bullying. Whether it's true or not, whether it's fair or not, to a lot of people around the world, the U.S. is kind of like that giant kid looming over you for your lunch money. Powerful countries and officials from powerful countries can throw their weight around a little bit. And when it's a matter of national interest, why not? In a very real sense, bullying kind of makes the world go round. Here to help us think about that is Tom Hansen. Hi, Tom. Thanks for being here.
Jeff, nice to be here. Thanks for inviting
me. Let's just give people your very abridged credentials here. Tom spent 21 years as a U.S. diplomat all over the world. You've also been on staff with the Foreign Affairs Committees of the U.S. Congress. Tom's now back home in Minnesota, and we're glad to have him back on In the Loop. They love you, Tom. Now, it seems like a while ago now, but in 2000, George W. Bush ran on what you might actually call kind of an anti-bullying platform when it came to foreign policy, right?
That's correct. President Bush at the time said that we should be more respectful of other countries, not be as sort of aggressive, that we should keep the National Guard at home, that that's where it belonged. And of course, 9/11 intervened, and the perception was that we needed some pretty strong policies. I think we are being perceived as a bully today in many ways, and I just like to outline a couple of reasons why. First of all, we spend more on our military right now than the rest of the world combined. We're so by far the biggest kid in the schoolyard that it'd be like a bunch of grade schoolers going to school with a full-grown Arnold Schwarzenegger or Fabio or something. I mean, we are by far the biggest kid. So almost anything we do risks seeming like bullying to people just because we're so darn big at this point.
Sure, but 9/11 is a great example. I mean, this is national interest that right. We're talking about. Why should we stand on ceremony and whether we're a bully or not? I mean, who cares, right?
Yes, but everyone knows how strong we are. So to the extent that we can approach these issues with consultation of other countries, right now we have a policy of not speaking to our enemies particularly. So I think it's in that realm where things maybe have gone a little off the track. At least as I talk with people from other countries, they perceive it that way.
Can you imagine us operating as anything other than a bully, though, with that kind of might behind everything that we say?
In some ways, we're so strong that we're going to come across that way. But Karen Hughes, who was very close to President Bush, who's just stepping down now as head of public relations, and has been trying to improve our image abroad, said as she left in an interview that she thinks it'll take decades for the U.S. to reestablish its image. So I think there should be a way for us to pursue the same goals, but in ways that do not come across unnecessarily as bullying.
So we're all running around playing kickball or whatever in the big global schoolyard.
Indeed.
If you're a small country or representative from a less powerful nation, how do you stand up to a bully in this case?
It's tough because the international environment really is like the schoolyard. What do you do if you start being bullied? Well, one, turn to another big student, maybe your big brother or something, to stand up for you. And during the Cold War, that was an option. There was the Soviet Union, which was almost as strong as we were, and alliances built up. Smaller countries would gravitate either to us or to Moscow for almost for protection. But that's not an option anymore. The rules are less of an option. International law is based on the rights of states. Small countries like international law because they think it protects them from the big countries. Well, we are announcing today with our transformational policy that our principles are more important than states' rights. And we're even reserving the right for regime change in certain cases. So this message is causing small countries to look elsewhere. And that brings me to the third way that in the schoolyard sometimes people react. And that's almost the level of fantasy or magical thinking where you imagine you could be strong. You know, you could be Peter Parker, you know, and suddenly overnight you've got strength way beyond your bullies or Superman. And the equivalent of that in today's world, unfortunately, is nuclear weapons. It's a quick way for a small country to equalize the situation and stand up to the bully. And smaller countries now are looking more and more toward that, Iran being an example, North Korea and others that are likely to follow.
I want to ask you about the personal level of bullying kind of in the international sphere.
Right.
So you've got two presidents or two foreign ministers. They're in a room together negotiating over something. Maybe you've been the guy at the table in some of those cases.
In a few cases, yes.
Does bullying happen there, or is everyone just so wedded to the, you know, decorum of the occasion that doesn't slip
in? You know, it's like a prism. Different cultures interpret bullying different ways. For instance, Americans, when they negotiate with Chinese or other Asian countries, often come across as bullying just by our natural style. We tend to be more direct, assertive, whereas in Asian cultures, you take a little more time, you establish a relationship, you save face. So both sides need to have clear idea of what the cues are coming on bullying. But beyond that, there are a lot of little games that are played. Sometimes the seating arrangement, one chair higher than the other so that one side seems to have a little, you know, more authority over the other. That's used in business, too, by the way, here. But by and large, it really depends on personality. And there are some personalities, you know, it's like your high school class is running the world, you know. It's very different depending on who you're with, and some styles are more aggressive than others.
Seems paradoxical that bullies would make their way into the diplomatic corps.
They're everywhere. I'm afraid there's no realm that's immune from them.
Well, Tom, thank you very much for being
here.
Thank
you, Jeff.
Welcome back to In the Loop.
Thank you so much.
That's Tom Hansen. So we've hit on bullying from the personal to the geopolitical. I'm going to bring things back actually into the business world here to move the conversation ahead. Half of Americans say bullying affects their work life in some way. More than a third say they've been bullied themselves. This is where bullying is actually proven to cost us money.
That's why companies hire people like Fran Seppler, who parachutes in to deal with corporate bullies. We've heard from her a couple of times this hour, and there's one last question that I want to get her take on.
What about when the president or the CEO is the bully? I mean, who's going to say, Fran, we need your help. You have to come in and deal with the big boss man.
When the top of the house is a bully, you tend to have a culture that's fairly damaged. You tend to be surrounded by people who are obsequious. You tend to mold the people under you into little mini bullies. And essentially, you've got a gang of thugs running the company. Those companies tend to eat people. People come, they get burnt out, they get damaged, and they go. And ultimately, those companies gain reputations as precisely that.
Have you ever had to take on a CEO to try to unbully, you know, the head of a company?
I have. This was a situation in which the board of directors of a company was faced with three outstanding lawsuits where the behavior of the CEO had been at issue. They had settled many claims before and really were well into six figures in financing this guy's bad behavior. This was an individual who was extremely arrogant. He believed he had earned the privilege to treat whoever he wanted, however he wanted. He treated his family the same way he treated his employees. It was habitual. Long-standing. And the best I could say that I would be able to do would be to have him identify what triggered the most abusive of the behavior and to learn to short-circuit that. And so he did stop having tantrums. He did eliminate the sort of the highest profile bad behavior, but it took a good 2 years to get there.
Do you consider him a success story?
I consider him as somebody who was able to keep his job because he was able to change his behavior. To me, a success story is when somebody actually has insight and gains empathy, and that's a harder trip down the road.
Here's something else interesting that Fran shared in our conversation. Kind of surprised me. She said if you're dealing with a bully at work, often the best solution is actually just to leave. This stuff gets identified and treated so seldom. According to a big study this fall, 77% of workplace bullying cases and with the bullied person leaving their jobs. Now, Fran explains something in there about the need for a bully to achieve a level of empathy in order to change his or her behavior. The first big step to achieving this empathy, of course, is realizing that you are, in fact, a bully. Bob Newman, like Fran, is a member of our Public Insight Network. As you're about to hear, Bob is an expert on bullying. He works with bullying prevention. But what caught our attention actually isn't Bob's work. It's this letter he told us about. He wrote it not too long ago, and we asked him to come tonight and read it for you.
Dear Byron, I don't know if you remember me, but I was your seventh grade English teacher 20 years ago. I've spent the last two decades in and out of the classroom as a teacher, administrator, and most recently as a facilitator of anti-bullying and violence prevention programs. It was during one of my anti-bullying workshops that I came to the eye-opening self-realization that I was, and am, a bully. I'm sorry, Byron. I'm sorry for the pain you had to endure while in my English class. I'm haunted by the images of your thoughtless and cruel classmates hurling those insulting remarks at you. I'm haunted by the memory of you sitting in silence, head bowed. But I'm haunted more by my own silence and do-nothing attitude that enabled and most likely encouraged those insults to continue. I told you to grow up and don't be a baby. By not helping or defending you, I confirmed you as a target. My silence endorsed and legitimized your mistreatment. I realize now that I wielded those destructive tools that cultivated my bullying behaviors throughout most of my life. But now I'm working with a new constructive tools, tools designed to build and nourish, especially the tool of empathy. Empathy, which I pray gives me an increased social awareness as well as more sensitivity to others' feelings. I know my discovery, confession, and apology are of little or no help to you now, Byron. But be assured I will never again ignore the pleas of others asking for help. And I will intervene on behalf of those who are being bullied. And most of all, I will not intentionally cause harm to others or emotional distress that I caused you. Will you forgive me, Byron? Regards, Bob Newman.
Bob, thanks for sharing your letter with us. I imagine it took a lot of guts to write that. What did it feel like to write that letter for you?
Oh, at first it was a very fearful act. And then after a couple false starts, it started to be like a soul searching and a soul cleansing.
So what became of this? What happened?
I don't know if he's forgiven me. I still await a reply.
Bob Newman, thank you very much for joining us on In the Loop. Now, Bob got all the way into teaching a seminar on bullying before he really realized that he was one. Well, at least part of him was. I mean, how many of us are 100% bullies, or 100% angels, for that matter? I think being bullied a bit as a kid left me more sensitive to what it's like on that side of things. But doing this show made me think about whether I had had any moments of my own. I asked my wife if she had any ideas. She did. Her list started with an undeniable example from literally 3 days ago. That's a little scary. I'm not going to get into that right now, but from there, you know, some examples started trickling back to me. The time in a Tokyo electronics store when I thought I'd use my American bluster and my caveman-level Japanese skills to try and return a microphone that I didn't want. Failed, by the way. The time I put on an attitude and broke up with someone by taking her to a nice restaurant. Most interactions I've ever had with my younger sister. All right, that's not entirely true. I love my sister, but I am trying to get in touch with my inner bully. If I know him better, if I know his history, I can control him. So I went digging around in there, and at some point, I found this song. To all the folks I've shoved before, those people I knocked to the floor, I'm sorry what I did, I acted like a kid, I don't know what I hurt you for. To all the folks I've pushed aside, yes, you sir, right there, I yelled at you and then you cried. You got in my way, but starting now today, my inner jerk head stays inside. I'm trying hard to make amends with all those I bully and ignore. Now I just want to be friends with all the folks I've shoved before. As always, that's the Smarts, our house band, backing me up here on In the Loop. And that's our show for this evening. You can join the network of listeners who help us build the show. Subscribe to our podcast. Check out the Loophole blog. You can get tickets to future tapings, all that stuff, at minnesotapublicradio.org/intheloop. In the Loop is produced by Julie Seipel, Sandon Totten, and Larissa Anderson. Our interns are Bradley Campbell and Anton Fryant. Thanks to Molly Bloom, Melody Yang, Andrew Haig, and Preston Wright from Public Insight Journalism. We get multimedia help from Christina Schmidt. Our photographer is Jeremy Pavlik. Our technical director is Josh Kubasta with engineer Maury Jensen. And live producer Alan Frechtman. Jim Gates is our editor. Our senior producer is Mark Rule. Production of In the Loop is supervised by Leith Bishop. Our executive producer is Michael Scholar. Thanks to all of our guests on the show tonight, and of course to our audience here at Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Jeff Horwich. We'll see you next time in The Loop. This is Jeff again with a quick note. We are halfway through our fall season. If you haven't come to join us in our studio audience yet, what are you waiting for? We've got tapings each Thursday night here at Minnesota Public Radio in downtown St. Paul. They're free, and we've got free food and libations. This Thursday, we're digging into Americans' charitable giving habits for a show called Charity, What Gives? Coming up after Thanksgiving, with the presidential primaries approaching, we'll be talking flip-flops. Reserve your seats at minnesotapublicradio.org/intheloop.